Blog Talk Radio.
And it's Talking Sports with Mike T here on a Monday afternoon, a little later than normal. I am your host, Mike Tramatozzi, here with you till 3:30 today, going over everything that's in the world of sports as we get ready for some Game 4s in the NBA. We've got some Game 7s in the NHL. So we've got some interesting topics to talk about today. Obviously, you could talk about the Players' Championship that ended on Sunday. Tiger Woods, your winner, which was quite interesting. If you heard about the complaints lofted at him by Sergio Garcia, and then Tiger comes back at Sergio, and then it all comes down to 17 on Sunday, where they're tied. Tiger's on 18, a group ahead of Sergio, who had just birdied 16 to take the lead. And what does Sergio do? He puts it in the water, not once, but twice on 17. Gets a 7 on the par 3, effectively ending the tournament, but just for giggles, decides to put his tee shot on 18 in the water. So a disastrous double bogey on 18 for Sergio after a quadruple bogey on 17. I'm not sure you could have the... That could have been a... First off, it cost him about $800,000 in terms of placing at different spots and the amount of money he would make. And it blew it all. Typical Sergio fashion, I think. There's not one person on the planet who expected Sergio Garcia to mount a comeback in the 71st and 72nd holes of a tournament, because he just doesn't do it. And everybody was right. So Tiger Woods wins the Players' Championship, continuing a nice season he's got going. Obviously, when you talk about Tiger Woods, it's not going to matter anything if he doesn't win a major. He's gotten close in the last couple of years. You can see that he's starting to play better in these majors, and we'll see what happens next month at the U.S. Open. If Tiger can finally get off that major drought and get another major to his name. But it'll be interesting. Tiger's played really well. It's the first time he's won the Players' Championship in 12 years. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. And he's playing very well. I think he's making some fantastic shots. His putter's off the charts. And he's just playing like Tiger Woods. He's once again playing like Tiger Woods, who, when he's playing like Tiger Woods, is the greatest golfer in the world. So it'll be interesting as we move forward if Tiger can continue this and whether or not Tiger can get a major under his belt, because that'll fully tell you that he is back to playing winning golf, as if Tiger Woods can win a major. Let's move to the NBA. Like I said, a couple game fours tonight. Memphis looking to take a commanding 3-1 lead against OKC. The Heat looking to take a 3-1 lead on the Bulls. And then tomorrow, you've got a Game 4 in Indiana where the Knicks are trying to even the series if anybody's healthy enough to play. And Golden State looking to take a 3-2 lead on San Antonio after coming back yesterday and winning a game that really Spurs teams of the past probably don't lose. But the Spurs are not playing like the Spurs recently. They're very lucky to not be down 3-1 in this series already and facing elimination tomorrow, thanks to that crazy comeback in Game 1 where they were down 16 with 4 minutes to go, came back, took the lead, tied it, were down 5 in overtime. So the Spurs really are having trouble keeping the guards in front of them. I think when you look at this series, the problem is there's too many people on Golden State that are able to score quickly and really put San Antonio in some bad matchups. You look at Duncan, 19 and 15, but he was a negative 23. Danny Green, a negative 25. Tony Parker, a negative 13. And the problem was, despite Golden State shooting in the 30 percentile in the first half, they were at, I think, 35% as a team shooting. They were only down 8 at the half, which is not a crazy margin in an NBA game. But in the second half, they really took control and then dominated the overtime, outscoring the Spurs 13-3. If you look at some of the stats they got out of here. 24 for Jared Jack, 22 for Steph Curry, only 10 for Klay Thompson. He was 5-13, but he hit a big running banker with about 30 seconds left to tie the game at 84. Harrison Barnes, 26-10. Obviously, Steph Curry playing basically on one ankle, had to get a shot to be able to play. 22-6. The Spurs were out-rebounded. Get this, out-rebounded by 14 against a team that started one guy over 6'10". David Lee is 6'10". But look at the rebounding rates. He had almost, David Lee, 8 minutes, but he had 5 rebounds. Bogut, 18 rebounds in 28 minutes. Andres Bjergen even came off the bench for 2 rebounds in 3 minutes. I mean, they're averaging almost a rebound a minute. That's crazy, especially in an overtime game. Not too many turnovers forced. 18. Golden State at 18 turnovers. San Antonio only had 12, so that's a pretty good number. The problem here in this series, as we've seen, is there's a game every night where one of these Golden State wings is going bonkers. Barnes yesterday, Curry in game 1, Thompson game 2. Game 4, not really anybody, or game 3, not really anybody, and that's what, and San Antonio was able to comfortably win by 10. But they are having legitimate problems guarding these wings for Golden State, because when Golden State goes small and puts Barnes at the 4, it's really throwing off San Antonio's ability to play big with Splitter and Duncan. You can't really put Diaw out there on them. They have to almost go small and put like a Gary Neal or a Ginobili in and put Kawhi Leonard at the 4 to try and guard Harrison Barnes. And then you've got Duncan, who's going to be out there guarding a Carl Landry or a Bogut if he's not on the court. And Duncan's not comfortable guarding people from the outside the paint anymore. Golden State has an opportunity here. They've really outplayed the Spurs in 3 of the 4 games, especially in the second half yesterday. Outside of Game 3, they've dominated this series. They should really be up 3-1. I don't see how, if Golden State can steal... First off, I don't think the Spurs are winning a Game 6 in Oakland, even if they win Game 5. I think the series is going to go 7. If Golden State can steal Game 5 tomorrow night, I think this is only going to go 6, because I think they're going to be in absolute bonkers mode in Oakland at the Oracle Arena on Thursday. And the Golden State, 28-13 at home during the year. They've only lost one playoff game at home, and that was in Game 3 here of this series against the Spurs. They beat Denver in all 3 home games, Games 3, 4, and 6, and they won Game 4 yesterday. So that puts them at 4-1 at home in the playoffs, which then runs their home record on the season to 32-14, which is crazy, crazy good. But I just don't see a way San Antonio can match the athleticism of the Warriors, because San Antonio's best lineup is a big lineup. Even if you're only playing Splitter 20 minutes and you go with Ginobili, Ginobili has shot terribly. He was 5-10 from 3, but he was 8-18 for the game. And if Ginobili doesn't hit that 3-pointer in Game 1, this series is almost pretty much effectively over. So they're not getting greatness from Ginobili. Parker 6-17, Duncan 7-22. Their big guns are not playing consistent enough to give them a chance, and they don't have the role players. Leonard's not there in his development to be a guy that's going to take something when Parker's not going 100% and get you 24. You know, he had 11-8 in 45 minutes. He shot 4 of 11, 0 for 3 from the 3-point line. The Spurs is a team 7 of 27 from 3. 26%. Golden State usually shoots a lot more than 18. They made 7 of them, 40%. Also, you want to talk about why you lose games in the playoffs? Go ask the Bulls and go ask San Antonio what happens when you miss free throws. Golden State, 20 of 25 from the foul line. That's 80%. San Antonio, 56% from the foul line, 14 for 25. That's not going to cut it. I don't care what team you are. You can't leave points, especially in a game that goes to overtime. If San Antonio had shot 60% from the foul line for the game, they probably win it in regulation. But they didn't. And this is a historically bad free throw shooting team. Talk about Duncan, 5 of 9. Ginobili, 0 for 2. Danny Green, 0 for 2. Splitter, 1 of 2. Parker, 5 of 6. But you, when you have 4, 6, 8 misses from 3 people, when you shoot, when Duncan and Ginobili shoot 5 for 11 from the foul line, that's a recipe for disaster. You know, Harrison Barnes, 7 for 7 from the foul line. Curry, 3 for 3. They just shot better from the foul line. And in a close game, in a playoff game, in an overtime game, look at those numbers. The extra possessions that the Golden State had, 4 more offensive rebounds, the extra points, 6 extra points from the foul line, and the same amount of free throws. That's why Golden State won this game. They wanted it more. They played better in the second half than the Spurs did, and they had tied the series at 2 in a series that they really should. It's almost like they're in control of the series when it's tied, and that's very hard to do. The other game of note will be tonight, Miami and Chicago, in a series that kind of just represents a WWE brawl. The Heat have come back 1-2 in a row, won game 3 in a game that they really didn't play great in. It was a tie game going into the fourth quarter, and then Miami outscored the Bulls 34-24 in the fourth quarter. When the Bulls put up 95 points, they have to feel like they have a really good chance of winning the game, and they didn't. They lost by 10. They got murdered on the glass by Bosch, specifically. 20-19 from Chris Bosch is something that shouldn't happen. But the Bulls only lost the rebounding battle by 2. They actually had more offensive rebounds than the Heat. And they really controlled their turnovers. Just a strange game where the Bulls just couldn't score enough. And again, they shot 68% from the foul line. 17 for 25 in a 10-point game is not going to cut it. Yeah, even if you go 25 for 25, you're not going to win the game because you'd still lose by 2. But it changes the complex of the game. If they went 21 for 25 and shot 80% from the foul line, that's an extra 4 points down the stretch of the game that changed the way you play defense, changed the way you what shots you take. The Heat got really big performances from Cole and Bosch, 18 for Cole, 3 of 3 from the 3-point line, and Bosch, 20-19, like I said, a huge game from Bosch. The Bulls really obviously have to get a split here and get it back to Miami, tied at 2. If they go down 3-1, I don't see a way that Miami doesn't win this series, probably in 5. The Bulls have to win tonight. And to win tonight, the Bulls can't have Bellinelli shoot 5 of 13. You can't have Nate Robinson shoot 5 of 13. You can't have Taj Gibson go 2 for 9. You can't play 7 guys, basically, with Nazi Muhammad only playing 3 minutes. Nazi Muhammad can't get himself thrown out tonight. It's just not going to work. Nate Robinson can't shoot 1 of 7 from 3. The Bulls shot 7 of 22 from the 3-point line. They allowed the Heat to shoot 8 for 20. The Bulls are one of the best teams in terms of defending the 3-point line this year, and they haven't done it in this series, especially in the last 2 games. If you're going to let these guys... Ray Allen shot 0 for 5 from 3. The best 3-point shooter in the history of the league shot 0 for 5, and he was 1 of 6 from the field. So explain that one to me. But the Heat are clearly the better team. Would I be surprised if the Bulls won tonight? No. I think the Bulls could have won the other night, too. The Bulls need to get what they got out of Boozer and Butler, 21-17, respectively. They got 15-11 from Noah. That's going to cut it. They got to get more out of Taj Gibson. I think if you do everything the same, Taj Gibson can't just give you 6 points and 2 for 9 shooting. He's got to do more. He's got to. All that being said, LeBron James didn't really even play well until the fourth quarter. 6 of 17. Dwayne Wade 5-7, and they still won by 10. I just don't know if the Bulls have the offensive firepower, especially without, obviously, Derrick Rose, without Heinrich, and without Dang. They're really in a time crunch where they need these guys to really play well, and they need everybody to contribute. They got five guys in double figures, but like I said, you can't, if you're Gibson, cannot shoot 2-for-9. He's right now too important to this team. For some reason, took a 3 the other night. I don't know why. But Nate can't shoot 1-of-7 from 3 if the Bulls want to have a shot here. When you look at how the other series are going, Memphis is in control. Again, that series should be 3-0 Memphis if it wasn't for Durant and some shoddy Memphis play down the stretch of that game. In game one, Memphis would be up 3-0 on Golden State, on OKC. They're the better team. They're playing like the better team. Tonight, they get a chance to go up 3-1. And you look at the box score from game three, the one thing that stands out is Kevin Durant shooting 5-of-9 from the foul line. That's not going to happen. That's an aberration, including the two misses, huge misses he had at the end of the game. But 20-of-9 from Gasol, only 8 points and 10 rebounds from Randolph, wasn't in foul trouble, played 38 minutes, just shot 4-of-12. They got 5-of-13 from Bayless for 11 points. They got just enough from Pondexter and Arthur dueling. You know, that's a good bench when Lionel Hollins is able to go 9 guys. Conley, again, 14-7, 6 assists. Conley's becoming probably a top 5 point guard, if not in the league, definitely out west. And the problem you're going to have if you're OKC is Serge Ibaka is clearly nothing more than a 15-10 guy, or maybe 17-10 at his apex. But 6-of-17 the other night is not going to cut it as the guy that they are now counting on to be the second banana to Kevin Durant. Reggie Jackson took 15 shots, almost as many as Kevin Durant took. There comes a time where Kevin Durant is just too much of a guy that just wants to get everybody involved. And I think he needs to sometime have that Kobe Bryant and Carmelo Anthony look where he's just going to take the shot. You know, 19 shots is nice. It's a good number, especially when you get to the foul line 10 times like he seems to get to every game. But it's, he's got to be up in those 20, 25 shots a game. He's got to be more aggressive. Unfortunately, with the way this team is constructed now without Westbrook, there shouldn't be 4 guys taking double-digit shots. You know, Memphis can do it because Connolly's getting shots around the basket. Tony Allen, Randolph and Gasol, obviously. Bayless, they're coming in different shots. But Ibaka's around the basket. Durant's doing everything. Reggie Jackson's pretty much from the outside. And Kevin Martin takes 17 shots off the bench. This is the problem with OKC, is their go-to guy doesn't want the ball at those crunch times, and he's really doing a bad job of taking the ball. So when Durant plays 46 minutes, it only takes 19 shots. That's a problem for OKC. Without Westbrook taking 20 shots a game, this has turned into really a by-committee team with a guy that's probably the second or third best player in the league. So they really have problems trying to figure out what their identity is. then let's move to that series that everybody wants to talk about. You know, the series where nobody can score a basket. That would be Knicks Pacers, everybody. One of the worst offensive games I've ever seen. And that's watching basketball in the 90s, where 82-71 was routine for the Knicks and the Heat or the Knicks and the Bulls. The Knicks got 7 points from Amari Stoudemire off the bench, 8 from Kenyon Martin, who's sick now thanks to J.R. Smith, who scored 9. But the problem is no one else scored in double figures outside of Carmelo Anthony. Shumpert was 3 for 10. Felton, 1 of 8. Stoudemire, 3 of 8. J.R. Smith, 4 of 12. Add all that up, you get 35% shooting. Pacers shot 35% shooting, but they got it on 9 more shots. And they also took 22 more threes than the Knicks. Pacers shot 10 of 33 compared to 3 of 11 for the Knicks. The Knicks aren't going to win a game where they're out-rebounded by 13 and don't take threes. It's just not going to happen. You know, the Knicks left some free throws on the bottom there. 18 to 25, which isn't a terrible number for a team, but again, in an 11-point game, you know, you need every point you can get. The problem is the ball movement wasn't really there. They only had 11 assists, and they shot only 11 threes. I think they need to be more aggressive taking threes. It's great that Amari Stoudemire hit one, but I don't think you can count on that. You know, Stoudemire, 7 points, 2 rebounds, played well. A little bit rusty. I think he can shoot better than 3 of 8, and I think he will. A lot of the shots he took weren't really bad shots. They just didn't go in. Yeah, I had a dunk and a 3-pointer. Outside of that, not really much else. The Knicks have played decent defense in the series. I mean, Indiana couldn't score either the other night, but when you get mauled on the offensive glass, you know, you're minus 8 in the offensive glass, you're minus 13 for the game. That's a lot of extra possessions. And then that's a lot more extra chances for Indiana, a lot more times where you got to play defense. So they have to play better on the glass. They have to limit that number. They have to get it to within single digits. If they get it to single digits, I think they'll be okay. But they have to win tomorrow night. If the Knicks do not win tomorrow night, there will be a big problem because it'll be very tough for them to come back from 3-1. If they go 2-2, there's, you know, obviously it's anybody's game as to who's going to win the series, and the Knicks will have 2 of the final 3 at home. But they have to win game 4. And to do that, they have to get more production from the secondary guys. Someone has to get into double figures. Felton has been doing that, and he didn't do it the other night. 1 of 8 from the field is not going to cut it for Ray Felton. He has to be into double figures. If Stoudemire can get into double figures, he only played 9 minutes. He's really on the limit of about 15 tops, so I don't know how much more you can get out of him. It'd be nice if Jason Kidd could score. You know, Jason Kidd and Pablo Prigioni, one of them has to score, because you can't play them combined 44 minutes and neither one of them get a basket. So that's got to change. Shumpert has played really well. Almost another double-double. He had 10 rebounds and 8 points. You'd like to see him get more into that 14-15 like he was the other night and what he was at the end of the Boston series. And again, outside of that, maybe Chris Copeland gets a couple minutes. Steve Novak maybe. Quint Richardson maybe. But if Felton plays better and Carmelo is a little bit better with his shot and takes more than 16 shots, he's got to be up into the 20, 21, 22 shots. I think there's a really good chance that the Knicks, you know, they're not playing terribly in this series, but when it's bad, it is bad. So as we wrap up this series, by the time we get to next week, the series will be over. Unless the Knicks will be one of the series. I think Golden State's the other one that will be having a Game 7 Monday if it goes 7. Otherwise, everything else will be over. It'll be Sunday. So we're either going to be coming back next week talking about Game 7s, or we're talking about getting ready for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. So if I were a man of prognostication, which we all know is, with my luck, very bad, I think the Knicks win on Tuesday. I think tonight, I think you're going to see Memphis and Chicago win. I wouldn't be surprised if you're seeing some Game 7s over the weekend. I think you'll definitely see one. You know what? I can't even say definitely, actually. I think if there's one that's the best bet to go 7, it's Knicks-Pacers. But even then, if the Knicks win tonight, there's a very good chance they can win in 6. There's a very good chance Indiana, if they win tomorrow, can win in 5. This is the same spot Indiana was in last year, though. 2-1 against the higher seed. Game 4 at home. They spit the bit last year. It'll be interesting to see how they come out this year. No Danny Granger, but the team is better this year in terms of win-loss, defensive percentage. All those things were an improvement upon last year. So it'll be interesting to see if they can avenge that series last year against Miami that some feel they let slip away, and whether or not they can move forward and continue with the next step of their, I guess, graduation or improvement. The next step for the Pacers is to win this series and get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But they're going to have to step on some demons, and that starts with tomorrow night. If they lose tomorrow night, watch out, because this is a team that showed you last year when they blow chances, they really don't get a second one. So that being said, until the Pacers prove me wrong, I'm going to treat them like last year's Pacers. I think they lose on Tuesday night, and I think there's a very good chance they lose the series, considering 2 of the 3 are at home, or on the road. So that's it for today. I'd like to thank everybody for paying attention and listening at a later time. We'll be back at our normal time next week. So everybody enjoy the week, take care, and have a good one.